This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Friday, September 17th, 2021. Mixed session again yesterday, so we on the headline don't close much lower, but intraday seeing another one of these little sell-offs back towards support. And just emphasizing once again on slide two in today's slide deck, if you have a look at that or just pull up your S&P chart with a 55-day moving average, we've seen seven prior tests of that moving average coming into this latest little bout of trying to test that level. Although each prior time, we've only seen basically one close. We actually have, closed one time below that level before rallying back above. Have not broken that since just before the U.S. election. So it really does look like a key support level. Again, the sort of bounce back this time around has been far different from the last prior few months where we've seen very, very sharp snapbacks. We do have quadruple witching today. In other words, when derivatives like futures and options on futures and options on single stocks are expiring. So I think we're far from out of the woods. And I think a lot of this is, Peter, is just this dark cloud and to what degree that dark cloud is contained to China. This whole situation with the real estate sector doesn't seem to be feeding through perhaps to the magnitude we think it deserves. That was a bit of your focus yesterday in a piece you put out. What's your take here?
Yeah, my take is that it is quite, for right now at least, some boring sessions we have in the US and Europe, to say the least. The real action is in China. The real action is in everything that is related to these bottlenecks and supply constraints that we're seeing. If you look at slide two in our theme basket, you can see logistics and semiconductors are the only two baskets that have a meaningful gain this month. And that's only due to what we are seeing. I mean, this global supply chains are getting worse. The outlook now has been extended that most people don't expect the semiconductor or the logistics situation to be improved until 2023. It's getting quite horrible out there. And with the Delta variant spreading around in Asia as well, you're having more manufacturing hubs being impacted. And it's, I saw a news story yesterday that, take IKEA here in Denmark, they're missing 25% of all their furniture. So my wife said, when you go to IKEA, it almost feels like it's empty. It's just
my daughter works at IKEA and she's tired of having to tell everybody why they're out of so many of the products.
Yeah. It's just anecdotal evidence of a very strange situation and world we're living in right now. And I'm talking about action. We have to zoom in on China. You mentioned it, John. We have a bounce today. You can see on slide three in the Hang Seng futures. So we are at some very critical levels, I would say, technically, and we are down almost 20%. It is a very hard line in the sand right here. Evergrande's shares continue to slide lower today, where all the other real estate developers, Sunac, China Vanke, what else have you, Country Garden, all of these stocks were actually bouncing from their lows from yesterday. So that's a positive sign short term here. I couldn't find any good news out of China and why we're seeing the bounce back that we're seeing.
I don't know to what degree it was the case, but the PBOC pumped about 90 billion of CNY of liquidity, is the biggest one this month by a couple of factors. So that was maybe a sort of a short term that the official support is there when things get particularly dicey.
Okay, but as we talked about internally before we went on the call, John, I mean, Bloomberg has estimates that 25% of the total supply chain on Chinese housing industry or real estate developing industry is 25% of economic activity. You see these numbers from Evergrande. They employ 200,000 people and they hire around almost 4 million people to do all the real estate construction on an annual basis. That's just one of the companies. And I think, interesting enough, China Vanke's management actually said to Nikkei Times a couple of months ago that the glory days are over in the Chinese housing market. It's just, I think the stakes are higher than what currently we probably are talking about. And I'm told to give you the word now.
No, I think because
the freight rates.
I think exactly. Yeah. Because we talk about congestions, and I think that's a nice segue to just the weekly take on the container freight rates. And you can see this here on slide nine. And I just popped in
Maersk. It's crazy.
Yeah, indeed. I just popped in Maersk's chart here, or share price, because they came out with their third earnings upgrade yesterday. They have now, since the year beginning of the year, they have now tripled their earnings forecast for this year. And you can see the reason why is basically it's one of the world's largest shippers in containers, and the cost of what their shipping is just continuing to go up. These are freight rates on the right hand side. The fat blue line, black line, is the composite. It's staying above $10,000 per box. It's six times the average for the long term average. And Maersk, as they said in the statement, it is bottlenecks and congestion just all over the place, which doesn't look like it's going to ease anytime soon.
It's basically retailers and manufacturers in Europe and US getting desperate. I think they are, from what I'm hearing, they basically just calling these shipping companies and just whatever you can get into a box, just get it into the box. And we talked about it all. The desperation is so big now in the industry that they're filling up containers to more than capacity on some of these ships, and they're actually falling off into the sea.
There's a loss going on there as well. And I think one of the developments we've seen over the last decade is that some of these ships are just basically getting bigger and bigger. That basically means the infrastructure at the harbors needs to be keep up as well. And as we had this surge in demand and surge in supplies of and demand growth, we've seen some of these harbors really struggle just to get these ships, getting these containers in and out of the harbors, because obviously as soon as they come into a harbor, it needs to get on a truck or smaller ships. So it is just a long lasting impact we're seeing here.
Yeah, and staying with the China theme before we go to currencies or FX, just want to highlight, it was actually you brought it to my attention, John, and that is the European luxury companies, luxury makers. I'll be writing a small piece on this on analysis of Saxo today, because it is quite clear with the common prosperity theme driving policy change in China right now, that they're also looking at hedonism or an extravagance behavior. And there were already back in 2013, there was actually a big hit to European luxury makers, because back then, Chinese officials were actually looking at extravagant behavior in China, and there was a very widespread people support among the population to clamp down on this behavior. That's back in 2013. Fast forward 2021, we're seeing some of the same signs from the Chinese government, and I wouldn't be surprised if there is quite a widespread support in the population for this as well, given the inequality and the, just in general, the whole focus. And if you look at the European luxury makers, I have the index in Europe on slide 4, you can see the massive rebound. And if I took a long-term monthly chart, it's been one of the most successful industries in Europe, selling very expensive luxury items to Asia and China in particular. But look at the technical, it looks very, very, very ugly.
And remember, a lot of the wealth in China is tied up into the property market. So that's another angle as well.
Well, there's a connection there, but you saw the initial downward impulse was on that big, clear push on the common prosperity, the inequality focus that elicited the big reaction. And now we're seeing a follow-up reaction. So it will be interesting to see if it hits new local lows there. a little bit of interesting action in FX yesterday. So we had a much stronger than expected U.S. retail sales report. Arguably, at the headline, the revision was actually as negative as the upside surprise was, but there was a better core release than expected. Quite impressive given the focus on weaker sentiment and on the Delta outbreak, et cetera. So we saw U.S. yields popping back higher. They're still in the range, so we need to see the 10-year benchmark breaking that 1.38% type area to sort of argue we're in an upward breaking fashion there. EU yields continue a bit higher, and it's quite interesting to notice what's going on in dollar Swiss and euro Swiss. So Swiss franc really reacting to that, plus I think the dump in gold prices yesterday, and I'll get Ole to talk about that in a moment. But if you look at the dollar Swiss chart, quite an interesting bar here. We saw a couple of attempts at this 92.50 area recently that were brushed back. And this is on slide 5, by the way, and this latest one yesterday really succeeding. There is a minor pivot high there from back in July, but looks like we're trying to break higher here. Obviously, it would be supported by a breakout in U.S. long treasury yields. I think that would be a necessary coincide indicator to get this chart moving higher. And then as well, Euro-Swiss is really the key pair for Swiss anyway, but it's breaching the 109 area, which also happens to be the 200-day moving average. A moving average has been very much in the crosshairs for traders going back quite some many months there. So Swiss franc on the move, very much, pretty much one of the few currencies on the move at the moment. If we look at the trend indicators on slide 6, that top line there, aggregate trends mostly weak, except for existing trends we've seen out there for a while, Norwegian krona higher, et cetera. look at gold and silver really starting to turn negative there. And I just wanted to briefly mention before I turn it over to you, Ole, the dollar yen snapback, I think also very much linked with that pop higher in U.S. yields. I think those downside sort of shenanigans we saw were very much linked to the fact that the speculative market is quite short of Japanese yen already, and there might have been a run on some weak hands out there. So still think that if we see U.S. yields breaking higher, dollar yen is going to have a very difficult time falling. But I suppose that was behind some of the weakness, which was one of the most more notable days trading range wise in gold in quite some time yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely, John. And we have been warning for a while that gold's reaction pattern seems to be negatively skewed and has been for a while. Basically meaning that when we see lower yields, we see hardly any reaction in gold and silver. And when we see higher yields, we see both the market respond quite negatively. Same thing happened yesterday. We broke below that 1780 level, which we've been talking about as the level of support. We went straight down to 1750, where the next line of support where we have where the slide has been arrested, at least for now. Silver as well here on slide 9, 10, you can see how we, you can argue that we had have a bear flag, which we've taken out. So far we are finding some support down towards 22.5. But generally this reaction function to yields really needs to stop before we can talk about any renewed upside in gold and silver. Next week's FOMC meeting will be potentially another key event for the market. But generally with the dollar, as you mentioned, John, also showing some teeth again, then the upside is limited at least for now. So overall, if you are a longer term believer in the price based on the inflation expectations remaining elevated, potential growth and not being strong enough to warrant a strong central bank reaction, then just sit on your hands, wait for 1835. I think there's plenty of time to be. Obviously, that level is quite far away now, but. That really would be the trigger that I think that is required for longer term investors to re-enter the market. There was just an article yesterday where one of the big fund managers from BlackRock basically said he had quite a sizable exposure in gold during the past couple of years. That has now almost been cut to zero. And I think that's replicated by many fund managers. They just simply don't see the need for diversification in their portfolios at this moment in time.
All right, and I do skew hawkish on next week's FOMC meetings in terms of the risk for a surprise. Actually, Ole, why don't you round out the commodity space, because we've seen so much focus on gas recently. We saw that big climax sort of bar yesterday where the parabolic rally finally was broken. No coincidence, perhaps, to see the Kremlin out talking up the Nord Stream 2 potential. And then we saw another big, a decent adjustment downward yesterday. Have we sort of seen the top here for now, do you think? I mean, that's always a terrible question to ask somebody, but it is quite a reversal.
It is a reversal. And what we are seeing in terms of headlines now for the past 24 hours is basically that the European chemical and fertilizer industries, they are starting to really bulk at these prices. There's a major sugar producer in France also saying this is just really eating into their margins, that they have to run, they have to pay these through the nose prices for electricity. So we are starting to see some sort of demand destruction. And really that is the only way forward. If we don't see a pickup in flows of gas, and if we see a pickup in the wind activity. It was interesting yesterday to note that we saw Ørsted, which is the biggest offshore wind operator in the world. They basically came out with a horrible quarter, basically saying, well, it's like a farmer not getting any rain. They didn't have enough wind, so their production
The worst in 22 years.
Worst in 22
well, they
years.
Keep, yeah. They keep sucking the wind out of the weather. So, no, I'm just kidding. But yeah, there is a risk there. There are seasonal patterns and year-to-year patterns that just are not reliable.
So, no, exactly. So we've seen European power generation from wind was hit a low early this week, around 5.5% of the total mix. That has now recovered a little bit. But just a month ago, it was around 12-13% of the daily input to this electricity production. So clearly, we're not there right now. And so I say, let's keep an eye on these headlines of demand destruction, potentially keeping the price keeping a lid over the price. But generally, finishing off, low inventories, as you can see there on slide 8, is the key focus as we head into the winter months. If we don't see a rebuild soon, which we are running out of time to do, then we are exposed to a cold winter. So let's see.
Exposed to a cold winter. No thanks. Let's round out. Actually, it's the slides are in poor order today. Apologies for that. But I just want to just add a little bit of focus on the calendar today later and just put this up on slide 7. So it's the University of Michigan inflation expectations, maybe a bit more important than normal. We did see in August this survey, not the inflation expectations, but the overall survey on sentiment hitting worse lows than we saw actually during the pandemic outbreak month. So pretty remarkable there. To what degree this was the debacle in the Afghanistan military presence, that exit and that the debacle around that, to what degree it was the new cycle on the Delta variant, et cetera. We don't know. Obviously, if that's what it is, you would expect to bounce back pretty soon, if not this month, then next month. But the inflation expectations is quite interesting because there is a component of that, of course, in the Fed's calculus in terms of when to start moving towards removing accommodation. And we did see that survey peaking for the longer-term inflation expectations, as you can see on slide 7, the blue line, at around 3%, which is really the highest level we've seen back 10 years, and really only poked above that very briefly, going all the way back to the 1990s. It's off the edge of the chart. So if we see this back at 3%, or especially we see it breaking higher, especially given the established trend from those early 2020 and 2019 lows, I think this just sort of adds to the Fed sense that, you know, we need to at least get the taper out of the way so we're a bit more nimble on the need to send a message on rate hikes. So that's one of the factors that could adjust the odds a bit towards the degree of hawkishness next week. But I guess earnings are a bit more back on board next week than they were this week, Peter. And I'll get to the calendar highlights in a moment.
Yeah, we are getting to the end of Q3, so the earnings season will really heat up in a couple of weeks' time. But in the meantime, we still have companies not following the usual calendar year. And I was quite surprised actually about some of the names that are reporting next week. So on Monday, we have Lennar, which is one of the big home builders in the US. Very curious to see what they say about the demand and supply situation, especially the supplies of materials for building in the US. And then Tuesday, Adobe, the spectacular growth story and just phenomenal change of business that have taken place since 2012. It's just, we've talked about it before, John. It's just an incredible company that continues to enjoy a monopoly almost on content editing software. We'll talk about that on Monday. And then also on Tuesday, we have FedEx, which is probably the highlight of the week. So FedEx is really experiencing rising costs from shortage of low-skilled wage workers in the U.S. to run the trucks and the last-mile delivery. There's really a lot of pressure there. Now we also have rising fuel costs and energy costs and generally from all this space and commodities. So in general, the expectation is that FedEx will begin to communicate rising prices to mitigate some of those rising costs and just basically add further pressure to underlying inflation. And then there is one theme we'll be talking about with a big logistics company. I can't mention the name, but we'll soon have a very big interview with the CEO of a big logistics firm in our Meet the CEO concept that we run here at Saxo. And we'll be talking about ESG and how that impacts cost, not only for miners, but also logistics firms like FedEx, because it's a very polluting business to move around stuff in the world. And how can you do that within the ESG? I was about to call it insanity, but it's not insanity, but it's just an intense focus. And it's hurting potentially a lot of businesses. We'll talk more about that on Tuesday, but that's the highlight of the week. I've put in a chart here on slide 11. Also, it's interesting to see FedEx have actually eased off or sold off in terms of its share price, where Maersk is just taking off. And that's because shipping is red hot, where FedEx for now have been holding back, hiking those prices. And then on Thursday, we have Nike, always interesting on the consumer side. They're doing better than Adidas at the moment. And then we have Trip.com, which is China's largest travel booking site. Curious to see what they say about the current demand situation in China.
All right, we'll quickly round this out. Next week, very busy. We'll get to more of highlights on Monday, but just do look at the calendar on slide 12 and realize that next week is a massive week for central bank meetings. I've highlighted the ones where I expect the market is a bit more anticipatory in terms of the message. So the Swedish Riksbank on Tuesday, of course, the FOMC is the big one on Wednesday, but also Bank of England Thursday, as well as Norges Bank. We're looking for that first rate hike of the cycle from Norway. Interesting to watch for that. The first G10 rate hike after the RBNZ got sidelined by a Delta variant outbreak there when they were just about to pull the trigger. So a big week ahead with this FOMC meeting, and also given where we are heading into next week, sort of perched near these very, very key and very obvious, one of these support levels that everybody knows about in, for example, the S&P 500. So stay careful out there. Have a great weekend, and we'll be back next week with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.